Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, coming to the, from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that shall determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, we're going to be talking to two people. One, of course, is Kirk McKenzie, who's a frequent guest on Radio Liberty. And then, of course, we're going to be talking to Danielle. And, of course, Danielle is going to be talking about the tragedy that's taking place, certainly within the rural community in Northern California. Danielle, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. And somebody that certainly my producer was just saying that your grandfather worked with us here in Santa Cruz at the Santa Cruz Hospital.
Yeah, I don't know if you recall a guy by the name of Vern Robert.
Oh, I knew Vern very, very well.
So. That Vern Robert Sr. is my grandfather, and then Vern Robert Jr. is my dad.
Well, that's great. No, I knew Vern. I loved him. He was an X-ray technician at the old county hospital.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, fine. Well, now, certainly, Kirk McKenzie recommends you. It says you are very articulate in discussing what's going on. So you pick up the story there.
Okay. Well, in California, it's kind of a misnomer that there's no regulation when it comes to harvesting timber, even on private land. And I just wanted to give an overview of what the requirements are for private landowners to harvest. First of all...
Now, basically, are you talking of all in California, or are you talking more of the Siskiyou County area?
Entire state.
Okay, fine.
The entire state.
In other words, people own private land. They should be able to cut the trees if they want to, but it's really controlled and regulated by various state and local agencies. They can tell you whether you can harvest your timber or not.
Exactly.
Go right ahead.
Exactly. Well, first of all, you have to be what's called a registered professional forester in order to do a management plan to harvest timber in the state. To become a registered professional forester, you need a minimum of a 4-year bachelor's of science degree in forestry from an accredited Society of American Forestry university. Humboldt State, UC Berkeley, and Cal Poly San Luis Obispo are the only ones in the state that I know that are accredited. And then once you get your degree, you have a 3-year apprenticeship program you need to complete, working underneath a licensed registered professional forester. And then once you get your 3 years apprenticeship, then you can qualify to take a state exam, which is handwritten essays, and you get tested on everything from hydrology, botany, entomology, pathology, forest engineering, forest statistics, environmental law. I know I'm missing sections.
All right. Well, anyway, because you take an extensive examination, then you are a registered forester. Is
exactly.
That right? And how long does it take you to get that education?
A minimum of 7 years.
All right. So you've got 7 years underneath you. You're now a registered forester. Well, what do you do with that? And how does that influence my ability, say, to harvest the trees on my property? Not that I have any property with trees, but if I did have any, and how under what auspices can they prevent me from cutting trees? After all, it's my property. It's my land. Where did is this a state or federal regulation that limits what I can do with my property?
It's state, and it was started in the 70s with CEQA, which is the California Environmental Quality Act, and also what's called the Zeebrugge-Ntegedli Forest Practices Act. And those laws require that there's an environmental review.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Okay, Danielle, go right ahead. Basically, you say there has to be an environmental review before you can harvest your trees. And I suppose that's an expensive proposition. But who get the forester in there to write the long, detailed, multi-page report? Doesn't say much of anything, but I'm sure that they jump through all the hoops. So basically, what would it cost to get an environmental review before I could harvest, say, the 10 acres of trees on my property?
10 acres, you're probably looking at least $10,000 to $15,000.
What happens if I have 100 acres?
There's kind of an economy of scale, because you have to do the same reporting regardless of the size of the plan. You have to do an archaeological survey. You have to do botany surveys. You have to do threatened and endangered species surveys. You have to, do design roads. And then you have to synthesize all the information in what's called the timber harvest plan. And the timber harvest plan then gets submitted to the California Department of Forestry. They review the plan, and they also review the plan with the State Department of Fish and Game, the various water quality control boards, mines and geology, and then if you've got anadromous fisheries, also your plan would be reviewed by Fish and Wildlife Service as well. So all of those steps are going to be taken regardless of the size of your plan. So there's some built-in costs. But if you had 100 acres, by the time the plan was written and detailed, it would not be uncommon for it to be 15 to 20. A lot of the plans that we write are in the neighborhood of 300 to 400 acres. And it is not uncommon by the time that the plan is initiated through implementation, it's about $40,000 to $50,000.
Now, you actually write these plans.
Yes, I'm a registered professional.
All right, fine. So basically, well, that's pretty good business then, isn't it?
On one side, yes. Obviously, it keeps me busy. But on the other side, no, because it is taking private property rights away from landowners, and especially small landowners that want to harvest trees for fuels reductions, reduce the risk of fire. Those folks are typically marginalized to what they can do on their property because...
Hold that thought. Okay. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Danielle is just saying that certainly they can cost $50,000 to $75,000 for an extensive report. She's a forester, registered forester. She writes these reports, but points out certainly how unfair these reports are to certainly small landowners who certainly may want to get the trees off their property because they want to cut down on the fire hazards. And there's a very definite fire hazard when you have trees there and you want to get them before the fire should break out. And so a lot of them don't have a lot of money. They've got to come up with maybe $20,000 to get a forestry report. And how much money can they make, say, by harvesting the trees on 10 acres? And do they do clear cut or do they do selective forestry now? Do they simply take half the trees? How does it work?
Well, I would probably say on 10 acres, there's no economic value in the trees unless you're in redwood, because there's still value in redwood. But our forest markets are at all-time lows. We've never had timber value so depreciated, primarily because of the housing start being what they are, and the fact that we import 80% of our wood products into this state.
But of course, we have lots of wood. We've got massive forests in this
state.
So they just effectively block them from harvesting the wood because of the spotted owl, or under one guise or another, because there are, certainly are people who want to destroy our timber industry and make us dependent on other countries. Isn't this true? At least
yes.
This is what's really happening. They've destroyed our timber industry so they could build up the timber industry in other countries. There is an organized effort, in my estimation, to destroy not only the timber industry, but so many of our industries here, which is why we have the massive levels of unemployment. But nobody wants to say that. And I bet Barack Obama didn't even mention that in his speech tonight. But you go right ahead, Daniel.
Yeah, and I would also add that you're exactly right. And there was a study done out of, I believe it was University of Minnesota, that showed that the number of direct and indirect jobs per $1 million invested, and there is no other industry that puts more people back to work than forced type employment. And it's one of the only ways that areas like Siskiyou County or other rural communities can truly put their people back to work.
But Daniel, aren't a lot of these areas threatened by wildfires since certainly they're not allowed to harvest? They're not clearing this out. And don't these people lose a lot of the wood to wildfires? We see some of these terrible fires that are growing, burning across America today. And suddenly, isn't this destroying many of our forests?
Yeah, a lot of our fires are uncharacteristically hot compared to historical fires, and that's due to the overaccumulation of forest fuels. Historically, in the Sierras, you would have anywhere from 50 to 80 trees per acre. Now, with fire suppression, it's not uncommon to have 400 to 600, even as many as 2,000 trees in the same in an acre. And when you have that number of trees, it creates what's called a fuel ladder, where instead of the fire going along the forest floor, it gets into the canopy of the trees, where then it's almost impossible to fight. And coincidentally, the fires then burn hotter. And when the fires burn hotter, they literally can turn the soils to glass and create impermeable soils. And then it's almost it's predictable that then following large hot fires, you're going to get mudslides. Like what happened in Southern California after the big, the big fires down south in San Bernardino. After the fires, they got mudslides. And it's because of the silica-based soils, they literally develop a hard pan so that it's kind of like what we would call water slide dynamics. If you turn the water on a water slide, you're able to slide down fairly easily. Well, if you can imagine all this rainwater hitting these soils, not being able to then permeate the soil, you get uplift, and then the soils fall downhill to keep it simple. So yeah, we definitely have a big problem with overstocking of forest fuels. And it does seem counterintuitive that we're not able to go in and harvest those areas. But typically we end up in litigation because people believe that, a lot of people in urban areas believe that harvesting trees is bad for the environment.
Well, actually, harvesting of trees and proper forest management is good for the environment, isn't it? Would you rather have a herd of wild wolves, or would you rather have a number of tame wolves? You know, domesticated wolves. Certainly, domesticated. You can domesticate wolves. Certainly, we had a dog that was large part wolf, and it was a wonderful dog. Mm-hmm. But of course, it was properly treated. And the same thing could be true with trees. I mean, you treat the forest right while they're healthy, and they can produce a great deal of good. But if you treat it wrong and you don't allow it to be cleared, at least partially cleared from time to time, you're creating this situation for a nightmare, and certainly for the people who live in the woods. Why, of course, an awful lot of homes are going to get burned. We see that here in Texas recently, within the last week, over 1,000 homes burned there.
Yes.
And now, would that be in timbered areas? Do you know anything at all about those fires down there?
I don't, other than that they've been burning home. That's about all I know. I haven't been following up on that. But, you know, fire is very important to our environment because our forests depend on fire. A lot of our native species in this state, in the Sierra Nevadas especially, are fire-dependent species. They need bare soil. They need open sunlight. And unless you get fire or some other disturbance in there to clear out the area, our native species are not going to be as thriving in the state. And then you end up with a species shift, which then affects wildlife and all the habitats in general. But as far as forestry goes, it is the law in this state for our trees to be harvested sustainably. There's minimum standards depending on how you, the landowner wants to harvest the trees, on what needs to be left or what needs to be planted. And if you don't meet those standards, the state has the ability to do a couple of things. First, as a licensed forester, the state has the ability to put me in jail for 2 years and charge me a $10,000 fine. And secondly, as the, on the landowner's perspective, the state has the ability to put a lien on the property until go in, reclimate the land, and then make the landowners pay. And like I said, if they don't pay, then a lien will be put on the property until the payment is paid. So there is no such thing in this state as deforestation. I always like to remind people that deforestation is a two-step process. You don't only harvest the trees, but you need to keep the trees out. That's deforestation. But when you harvest trees and then plant trees, that is not deforestation. That is forestry. That's what we do as a profession.
Well, in my understanding, that places like Siskiyou, they do not allow you to cut the trees because of the endangered species up there, the spotted owl, which, of course, is a total fraud. It's simply used as a means of shutting down the forestry. But aren't there lots of areas in this state where they're just not allowed to do what's logical to have forestry, to have proper handling of the trees?
Yep. In California, there's about 101 million acres of land in this state. Of that land base, there's about 32 million acres of timber. Of that 32 million acres of forested land, only about 7.5 million acres is ever available to be harvested. So, yeah, a lot of our land is already locked up. The federal timber sale program, because the federal land is regulated under the National Environmental Protection or NEPA, which is the National Environmental Policy Act, and that is regulated by the Forest Service and BLM, and they have a whole different set of principles, and 80 to 90% of all of their timber sales end up in litigation. So in most
end up where now?
In litigation.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States addressed the nation today. Well, he wants to put people back to work. He never mentions the fact that a lot of reasons we don't have people working is because of federal rules and regulations. The federal government is shut down, as well as the state government, and in large part the federal government has shut down timbering in the United States, in large segments of the United States, because they want to shut down the timber industry to build up the timber industry in other nations. That's why most of our timber comes from other nations.
Yes.
And of course they've done the same thing. We do not have any tariffs. Basically, we had this last year almost $750 billion trade deficit. I think it was $690 billion. That means certainly the next largest trade deficit of any nation was Great Britain, with about $150 billion trade deficit. Most countries do not have a trade deficit. Actually, they have certainly more in the way of trees, more in the way of exports and imports. But basically, the whole idea is to transfer America's wealth to other countries. And basically, the federal government is doing everything they can to destroy our industries, our agricultural industry.
Yes.
Certainly, the boat building industry, the boot industry. Certainly.
And I would even argue they're even trying to suppress our renewable resource industry.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in a moment. Danielle, you go right ahead.
Yeah, what I started to say is in Siskiyou County, our local environmental groups have even been litigating the development of renewable energy resources since the timber industry has pretty much collapsed. And real quick, on the timber industry, all our timber companies that are left in the state, they're privately owned companies. They might be large companies, but they're all family-owned companies. But getting back to what I was saying, we've tried in this county to develop geothermal resources, and the environmental groups have been fighting geothermal development for the last 10 years. There is another type of renewable energy called biomass, and it's where you burn wood waste. Rather, it's yard wood waste or brush or residual forest fuels. They can burn that wood waste at 99.99% clean energy and power homes with that energy. And there was a project up here out of Weed where the environmental group have stopped, or for 3 years they litigated a retrofit of an existing biomass facility, which would have supplied renewable energy to 9,000 homes in Redding. And then they're trying to take out all of our dams on the Klamath River. There's four dams they're trying to take out. And then to the south of us in Shasta County, they also fought against the development of wind turbines off of a mountain called Hatchet Mountain. So on one sense, they say they want renewable energy. On another sense, they won't allow renewable energy to be developed. So that's the other big hurdle we're trying to fight. In our rural
what
area.
What about mining? Is there any mining up there? Are they fighting mining and the development of mining facilities?
Yeah, that's the other big issue. Is there's been a 5-year moratorium on dredge mining in the rivers. And
on what is the basis for that? What is the justification for it?
Fish. They're saying it disrupts the fish.
Well, they're going to destroy all the fish when they take the dams out, because all the silt is going to silt down all the beds where the fish would ordinarily spawn. They know this is going to destroy the fish. So on one hand, they shut down the dredge mining because they want to protect the fish. On the other hand, they're going to take out the dams, and the silt is going to flood the lower rivers and destroy the spawning beds.
Yep, that's been one of my main arguments, is water quality, and it's the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, have stated that on forest operations that we cannot log within 150 feet of either side of a water course that has fish. However, and that's primarily coho. However, they are planning on letting, you know, God knows how many million tons of sediment go downstream, and we were told, our industry was told, that if we get a cup of dirt in the creek being the Klamath River, that we would be in violation of our permit, because we have to get a waste discharge permit from water quality in order to harvest timber. I didn't mention that, but with the timber harvest plan, there's actually several different plans or permits that you need to get. You need to get a...
Hold that thought, Danielle. We'll be right back in just a moment here.
Okay.
With Danielle Linder. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Danielle is a registered forester, and she's just pointing out how everything is being done by the environmentalists who are funded by the federal government to block the development of alternative energies. Certainly they have geothermal up there. In other words, they would have geysers or certainly a means of having hot water that could be utilized to actually turn turbines, but they block that. And then, of course, they wanted to be able to burn biomass. This would be wood chips, other things like that. Certainly wood debris, and they could be burned 99% clean. They block that. They block the mining, efforts to have mining up there. They will, basically, of course, they will tell people that they can't, if they've got lumber, they can't lumber within, 150 feet of the river because they can't get dirt into the river. If you were to get a cup of dirt into the river and contaminate the river, a cup of dirt. And yet they're going to take out the dams, which is going to release hundreds of thousands, millions of tons of silt behind there, and it's going to go downstream and it's going to destroy the spawning beds for the fish. So on one hand, they're going to take out the dams because they want the fish to spawn. On the other hand, they're going to destroy the spawning beds and the fish will never come back, at least not for 10, 20 years. So basically, if you understand that all of this talk about concern about the environment is simply talk, what they really want to do is destroy the quality of life here. They want to destroy jobs. They want to simply destroy timbering and mining and the geothermal industry. They want, of course, to destroy the fishing industry. They want to destroy the farming industry. They want to create floods. And those are simply the good things out of the Daniel, do the people up there understand this is being done intentionally because they're people? The environmental movement, funded by the federal government and the great tax exempt foundations, really wants to destroy our nation. This is what it's all about.
Yeah, there's a large movement up here that definitely understands that.
Well, Daniel, you ought to get these people to listen to our programs on a regular basis. You can get them on the internet. You can get them on shortwave. And they need to understand what is really behind this. And I do hope maybe you, since we seem to be related, I know Vern was your grandfather, was a very good friend of my wife, and they worked at the county hospital together. I worked with your grandfather as well. But certainly get people up there to listen to our programs and to learn and to get angry and to start letting other people know that there's a subversive element working within our country today that wants to destroy this nation, and they're doing a pretty good job of it.
They are.
Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And right now, of course, we have Kirk McKenzie on the line with us. Hi, Kirk. How you doing?
Well, just fine.
Do you have anything you'd like to add to what, of course, Danielle is saying?
Well, I think you're doing great. I think that there's picking up on your theme. You know, it's interesting when I look back in history how I kind of began to reinterpret things. If I don't know if you remember, but I remember quite clearly the corporate raiders, people like Carl Icahn, who took over TWA, broke it up, claiming it'd be more competitive. I believe the corporate raiders themselves, operating out of New York City, were doing nothing more than destroying American industries one after the other to begin to make this move to moving those jobs and those industries offshore. I think that what we're seeing now is just a continuation of that. But, you know, this stuff started back in the 60s, if I recall correctly. One of the things I would like to have Danielle cover is when I was up there, she's talking about the number of agencies that they have to report to and the amount of regulations and, you know, the fines and the fees. Just kind of give us some sense of just how invasive this has really gotten to be, almost unbelievably burdensome to these people to just cut a tree.
Okay. Well, like I stated, you have to have a timber harvest plan, which is the functionally equivalent of an environmental impact report. And then you have to obtain a 1600 permit, which is a stream bed alteration permit through the Department of Fish and Game. There's a $1,345 base fee for that permit, plus there's a $112 project fee, and they view a project for each creek or culvert that you have on your property. You even need to get a permit if you want to maintain your culvert and clean out your culverts. You have to get a separate permit or agreement, as they call that. They call it a routine maintenance agreement to maintain your culverts and roads. Then there's also a Department of Fish and Game THP review filing fee, which is due within 30 days of the date of approval of your plan, and that's another $965. Then you have to report to the State Board of Equalization for yield taxes, and they take 2.9% of the value of the logs. And then you have to deal with the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Department of Forestry.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. Okay. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, Danielle, haven't they lost an awful lot of jobs up in the Siskiyou County? Hasn't the population there dropped really dramatically?
Yes.
What's this done to the property values, things of that sort?
Well, our property values, this is anecdotal, it's not fact, but I would say just in the last few years, of course, we experienced the housing bubble. I would say our property values are down 40% without blinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just my own view. But since there was a study done before what's called the Northwest Forest Plan and after the Northwest Forest Plan, the Northwest Forest Plan was a President Clinton plan that was kind of an agreement, if you will, between the environmental groups and the industry and the Forest Service on how we could, quote, all get along and meet the objectives of the environmental groups, but still have a viable industry. And we don't even harvest half of what is considered the allowable sale quantity. We don't even harvest half of the amount stated in the allowable sale quantity.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Danielle is just pointing out that the Siskiyou County where she lives is certainly is a depressed area. Property values are down 40%. They certainly they lost a large good part of their population. People have just had to move out because there are no jobs there. Even with the restricted amount of forestry and timber harvesting that's allowed, they're only really doing half of that. Every barrier is being put in the way to prevent the harvesting of trees there and to destroy industry up there. These things are not happening by accident, ladies and gentlemen. They're happening by intent, partly state, but much of it's federal. And when Obama says he wants jobs, yeah, he wants jobs. He wants lots of jobs over in China and Thailand and Malaysia and all throughout the world. It is his EPA. It is his environment. environmental groups. It is his movement, that the movement that he represents, that has put all the barriers in the way and shut down our timbering and our mining and certainly all the other things up there, and is intent now on destroying the agriculture and the fishing industry and laying off more people. So he says what you want to hear. But that's not what he really intends to do. And remember, of course, Barack Obama is simply a shill for the people behind the scenes. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question for Danielle, who's very, very well informed and is certainly doing a great job of getting the information out, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And Danielle, do you have a website or any place people can go to get more information on what we've been talking about?
Yeah, our website is klamathalliance.org. And
klamathalliance.org. Well, how about the people up there? How about the government officials, your local officials? Are they upset about this? Are they trapped in the system?
Are they
part of this whole problem, or this whole effort for rewilding and bringing the grizzly bears back and bringing the wolves back and bring back the mountain lions and of course, drive the people off the land because, of course, these are endangered species. And it's all right for them to kill you, but it's not all right for you to kill them. And basically, of course, there is an organized effort to destroy the ability of people to live in rural areas. They want to put them all in urban areas where they can watch them all the time with their little cameras, all in the name of protecting them from the wicked terrorists, and where they can monitor everything they can do, and where they can track their movements, and where they get them out of their cars, and they know exactly what they're doing, and so do the people in charge of both political parties. And they're going right along with this diabolical agenda. Now, we do have some pretty good people in our state legislature, and I will say that I appreciate the courageous stand many of them are taking. But certainly the people with the Democrat legislature in the state of California do have an agenda. And that is the destruction of the infrastructure of our nation, and the destruction of the infrastructure of our state, of spending us into oblivion and regulating every aspect of life, from the cradle to the grave, and watching everyone bring us under the surveillance society, and nobody has the courage to speak out. And if you do, you're not going to be heard anyway, because, of course, the liberal establishment controls the media, and it's very difficult to get the truth out across California. But, Danielle, you go ahead and pick it up from there.
Okay, yeah. I'm not sure if you wanted me to follow up on the additional...
You go ahead and follow up on the additional... Go right ahead.
Okay, yeah, the additional agencies you need to deal with. If you have spotted owls, if you live on the coast or you live in the Sierras or Cascades north of Highway 299, you're what's in called Northern Spotted Owl Territory, and before you harvest timber, you need to set up stations out in the woods and call each station at night 6 times per station for 2 years prior to harvesting. And then...
What do you do? Why do you call the station? What happens when you call the station?
What you do is you actually hoot for spotted owls. You have... My husband is what's called a spotted owl expert. And you go out and you hoot. There's an electronic recording. We used to voice hoot, but now there's an electronic recording that you let play for 10 minutes. And spotted owls are fairly territorial. They'll hoot back if they hear another owl.
Yeah, but this spotted owl is not endangered.
I know.
It's different. I mean, this is garbage. This whole thing is as great a fraud as Barack Obama is saying he's going to put our people back to work by spending more money that we don't have. Go ahead.
Well, you don't even hoot just with on your property. You have to hoot within 1.3 miles of the project area. And it's an estimated cost just for the spotted owl is anywhere from $7,000 to $21,000 per timber harvest plant. And then you have to get a waiver with waste discharge, which is also known as an erosion control plan, which is through the Water Quality Control Board. And there's a $1,200 fee a year that you are operating. And then you have to search the Natural Diversity Database for threatened and endangered species, and that is run through Department of Fish and Game. And to get access to that database, it's $600 for subscription with a $400 a year renewal. And then you have to do archaeological surveys, and you have to check in with what they call information centers. Up here, we have to check in with Chico State. They're the Northeast Information Center. And they will do an archaeological records check at anywhere from $150 to $225 an hour, which then will help people like myself who are licensed to do archaeological surveys to go out and survey the property that will be harvested. And then you also need to work with Fish and Game on botanical surveys as well as other wildlife surveys. You survey for, depending on your habitat, you could be surveying for salamanders, Pacific fishers, northern goshawk, willow flycatchers, Sierra red fox, great gray owl. That's just the ones I can name off my head.
Well, now, basically, is this state or federal?
This is all state.
It's all state.
But everything that we do, the feds do at some level, just a different process. And then there's also all the anadromous fisheries. So if you have coho on your property or you have a creek that eventually flows into a coho stream, you have a special set of rules which give additional protection on all your creeks. And then the legislature keeps going round and round on rather you should file a fee to Department of Forestry or Cal Fire, as they call themselves now, to actually file a timber harvest plan, which is being discussed. It actually ended up on the last budget go-around, but luckily there were some wise assembly members that saw that line item and got it off. But the fee as it stood would have been an additional $40,000 just for a submission fee. So, and I think it's because the state's hurting for money. They're just trying to squeeze blood from every turnip.
Well, it is, but don't they realize, of course, that what this is going to do is discourage jobs?
Oh, yeah.
Nobody's going to develop. Nobody's going to be lumbering. And actually, in the long run, of course, what they're doing is actually cutting back on jobs and cutting back on income. One reason we're having so much trouble in California is because we have so many rules and regulations that companies and corporations are simply moving out of California, and an awful lot of people are not going to develop their land simply because they can't afford to. Oh, the government's going to get all the profits.
Yep. And now, you know, they make it hard on landowners to go out and thin their property. And yet, I don't know if you're aware, but if you live out in the forest or an area that's not covered by a local fire department, they are talking about fire fees in what they call the state responsibility areas. And the fire fees can be anywhere from $175 for a small area all the way up to over $3,000 for larger parcels per year that would be assessed on your property taxes. So on one hand, they're prohibiting you from managing your property, making it fire safe, which then if it's not fire safe, obviously there's higher risk to the men and women fighting the fires as well as additional costs. And then the state is then coming in the back door and going to charge the landowner for not for living in the wildland or in small towns because it'll mainly affect rural communities. So it's definitely a full frontal attack. And we've had, since 1990, I can't even tell you how many mills have closed, but we've had about 80% of our mills closed in the state since 1987.
Kirk, how many are cut down?
I think it's 22 or 24. I'm recalling from the presentations I was given up there. But did you listen to what you just said? It just staggers me. I mean, this list of what goes on, the regulations goes on and on and on. And I think that one of the things that she mentioned to me when I was up there was that, you know, whereas a forester had no agency to report to, then it became one agency. Now they have five or more agencies they have to report to, all of whom have requirements and sometimes conflicting requirements. I mean, I certainly, you know, being an urban person, had no idea how far this has gone. And it just staggers me that it's reached these kind of proportions.
But, of course, this is all aimed at destroying the timber industry, the fishing industry, the agricultural industry in that area, the mining industry in that area. And then to say, well, gee, look, we're not getting any taxes there, you know. Well, you're not getting any taxes because people are not going to be able to have mines. They're not going to be able to get their timber in. They're not going to be able to develop the geothermal. They're not going to have any money to pay the taxes with. So, and basically, as the value of the property goes down, they can't increase the property values, suddenly, and then you have inflation. But, of course, the cost of government is going to go up. But they're going to get less and less tax money because the value of the property is going down and down. Go right ahead, Daniel.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And in Siskiyou County, 62% of our land in this county is owned by the federal government. So that's 62% of our land base that does not, our county does not receive taxes on. And when the land, there was an agreement around the turn of a century when the Forest Service took over management of that land. It wasn't like they just came and took it. It was an agreement between the county officials of the time and the government that they would come in and manage it, and that we would be given 25% of the timber proceeds in lieu of taxes. Well, since the decline of the timber industry and the almost closure of the Forest Service, a lot of rural counties, such as Siskiyou County, have been extremely crunched financially. And those taxes, just like property taxes, used to go to pay roads and schools. Well, there's a program called the Secure Rural Schools Act, which is supposed to backfill the monies that should be coming to the rural counties off of the federal forest. But since of the spotted owl and litigation, the trees are not getting harvested, so there is no 25%. But now with the budget deficits the federal government is receiving, there is almost certainty that the Secure Rural Schools Act is going to sunset, which for our county, with the population of about, I think there's about 45,000 people in our county, we get about $9 million as a payment instead of, you know, tax base for the timber. That $9 million is going to sunset. So that is over half of the operating budget of our road department and a significant portion of our schools. So it's going to be a perfect storm in the sense of not only is our industry in its last throes, but we're not even going to be able to get the, I don't know if you want to call it a subsidy, but the money that we were promised from the federal government for them managing the land that we were supposed to. So I don't know how Siskiyou County is going to look in the next, you know, 5 years from now. It's quite a scary thing, you know. And my company, I have a forestry company that I own. I employ 6 employees. I've had as many as 18 employees. We primarily hire college interns and local guys and gals that have an interest in forestry. We treat our employees well, and it's hard to keep people working in this area, even in an area that's, you know, 70% trees. That's what our land base is made of, and it's frustrating because we are doing the right thing for the environment, but people have an assumption that more trees the better, that somehow that's better for the environment, and it's not better for the environment. It's not diversity when you have a blanket of trees from the eastern border of California to the Pacific Ocean. That's not diversity. Our forest historically had more of a mosaic, almost a quilt-like look, where there was openings, there was areas of dense trees, there was areas of old-growth trees, there was areas of thin trees. Now you drive up and down our forested roads, and it is solid trees as far as you can see. And half the time, you can't even get off the road to get into the forest. And that is unhealthy. And it's frustrating as a forester. You're trained in managing forests for forest health is your primary objective, to manage wildlife. And it, the state, they do everything under the banner of forest health and wildlife protection, and they are doing everything exactly opposite of what, you know, my years of training have taught me.
Well, now, are the bears coming back? Are the mountain lions coming back? The wolves coming back?
Well, the mountain lions are already here, and they're already here in abundance. The bears are quite prolific as well. We don't have wolves, although there is a contingency to reintroduce the wolves to Siskiyou County, although I'm not in favor of that. My thought is, if you're going to introduce wolves in, quote, their native habitat, which is Siskiyou County, you also need to introduce wolves in their other portions of the state where their native habitat is, which is, you know, the Central Valley and the Bay Area. And the same with the grizzly. We have a lot of people that want to reintroduce the grizzly to the state. But I always argue that if they want to introduce the grizzly to Siskiyou County because that's their, quote, native habitat, well, then put them back in the Bay Area because that's also their native habitat.
I think that's an excellent way to approach it. I think maybe what we ought to do is get a few thousand grizzly bears and put them into Sacramento and just put a little bit of a salt maybe around the neck of all the politicians.
Exactly.
But basically, ladies and gentlemen, we live in a world gone mad. And when you understand this whole idea of rewilding, oh, we want to get things the way they were before the wicked white man came. If you haven't read the material on Agenda 21, we can a book by our good friend Orlean Kulo, By Stealth and Deception. You need to hear my talk on the sustainable development, the road to world government. You need to, of course, to get our syllabus on a sustainable development. You need to understand these people know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know. Danielle, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so very much for being with us. And Kirk, thank you. It's been a great program. We have 3 minutes more. Don't hang up just yet.
Thank you.
Well, Danielle, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, great. I just want to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you and try to get the message of rural counties out into more urban areas, because I think that's where the real disconnect is. I didn't get into forestry on purpose. It was by accident. And it was because I was born in Santa Cruz, and my grew up in Calaveras County. And even though I grew up in Calaveras County, where it's more of a rural area, there was still a disconnect on what harvesting of trees really meant and why we need to harvest trees and the benefits of our forests. And it's that disconnect that I think is driving the average person to not understand what the problem is and to trust the environmental group as if they have the best interest. So I just want to thank you for allowing us to help get that message out to people that might not otherwise hear it. So.
Well, of course, in my contention, the environmental groups certainly are not there, certainly for the best interest of the people or the best interest of the wildlife or the best interest of the trees. They have a different agenda because, of course, I believe that they really are destructive. They're being financed by the wealthy foundations that want to destroy the contemporary society. When you understand that, you can understand why they would certainly shut down the geothermal development, most logical thing in the world, why they would come out against the wind farms, why they would come out against the using of biomass. Why? Because they don't want people using electricity. They want to take out the dams. When you understand they're taking out the dams, they're fighting the wind power, they're certainly fighting any effort to do is logical to provide electricity. When you understand that basically if you want to have healthy trees, you've got to thin them out. They do everything they can, not simply to create a situation where the fires can burn. I believe they're actively, and we've heard this from people who've talked to people within the federal, certainly Wildlife Department, who said, we don't want to let the fires burn. We want to make them burn. They're talking about the forest. They know what they're doing. They're people who have a different world agenda. And we need to expose this, and we need to take America back. And we need to preserve our forests, but they need to be managed and not simply destroyed and allowed to burn along with all the helpless animals. Our guest this evening, Daniel Lindler and the creator, Keith McKenzie, God bless both of you. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Great, thank you. And one other thing, if you could tell people to visit...
Hold that just a moment.
Okay.
Daniel had one other place you wanted people to go to. What is that, Daniel?
There's a great resource to learn about forestry, and it's www.rethinkforest.com, and that's rethinkforest.com.
Rethinkforest.com?
R-E-T-H-I-N-K.
Rethink Forest.
Rethink Forest.
Okay, anything else you want to say, Keith, before we let you go?
Just briefly, you know, this is all takes money. I think people have to make the connection, follow the money and make the connection back, because it isn't just a bunch of green-minded people here. They're getting money from deep pockets, basically the deepest pockets exist. They're getting money from people who have the power to print money. And we ultimately have got to take that power away from them, or they will continue to destroy this country and the world, frankly.
I think you're absolutely right. There really is a movement out there that has a different agenda for America. And if we don't take America back, we're going to lose it. God bless both of you. Thanks so much. And this is Dr. Stan. This is the time when I need to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you're in a position to help. We'd love to have you join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And you do that by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. I've got a station in the Imperial Valley of California. Joyce and Pastor Butch are both on the station, and they've offered me a position there, to take our program. Certainly, if you're in a position to help, why, of course, they've given us a fairly attractive offer as far as the cost is concerned. If we have the pledges, we're going to get that station. So if you're in a position to make a pledge for 6 months or for a one-time gift, it'll help us, and we'll go ahead and be on that station. It's certainly adjacent to the Los Angeles Basin. But we can reach an awful lot of people. They're going to have a great lineup, and I'd be on right after Joyce and Pastor Butch. And we will begin to change that community as people listen to our programs and hopefully begin to understand that what's going on today is not accidental. If you haven't actually heard my talk on Sustainable Development, the Road to World Government, and read our Sustainable Development syllabus, you need to. You certainly need to get Orlean Kula's book, By Stealth and Deception. We have all of them. That's my talk on Sustainable Development, the Road to World Government. My syllabus, Sustainable Development, and certainly we have a four-tape set on Sustainable Development and on Population Control. This is a definite plan. It's a subversive plan, and the people who are funding this are subversives. Who are they? Well, you need to read the book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence. We've kept the book in print since, for 20 years. It's the story of the great tax-exempt foundations, Rockefeller, Ford, Carnegie, and this book was written in 1958. Everything has been done to suppress it. You need to get Professor Quigley's book. We'll tell you about the conspiracy that controls our country. We have the book by Gary Allen, a little book. It's easy to read, called None Dare Call It Conspiracy. None Dare Call It Conspiracy. We have used copies of Barry Goldwater's book, called With No Apologies, written in 1979, where Barry Goldwater explains to you what's going on. As he says, you know, the Council on Foreign Relations is national, but the Trilateral Commission is international. Its goal is to take over the financial and commercial interests by first seizing control of the political government of the United States. Let me repeat that. The Trilateral Commission is international. Its goal is to take over financial and commercial control by first seizing control of the political government of the United States. And believe me, Barack Obama is their man, just as George Bush before him and Bill Clinton before him and George H.W. Bush before him and even Ronald Reagan invited the members of the Trilateral Commission to have a dinner at the White House. You Need to Get Him, Christy, book by David Rockefeller, memoirs, our number 1-800-544-8927.